Welcome to Hype episode 83. I'm Marima. The hostile takeover is still in place. I have the lovely Pamela with me. What's up, Pam?
Hey. It's a real hostile takeover this week. Australian hostile takeover.
It so is. So we don't have Selena with us, unfortunately, this week, and we don't have Kyle, but I got in a special guest to kind of replace them, and I'm very excited about this because I believe it's the first time in Hype history that we actually are outnumbering the others with Australians. So that's very exciting. And really, that's the only reason that I brought her on. She's a New York Times bestselling author, no big deal. She's just like super popular. They're making movies and TVs of her books, but like whatever. The main thing is she's Australian. So I'm very, very excited to welcome the lovely Amy Kaufman onto Hype. Welcome.
Hey, Australia represent.
Exactly. Amy's not allowed to talk about her books at all, only Australia for the entire show.
this will now be, an hour of how we ride kangaroos to school.
Mm. Perfect. And how you're in the future, so you know everything.
Yes.
We are. You know what? The best American comment that I got on the touring I did at the end of last year was being complimented on how well I speak English.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh. What did they think you spoke?
What? Australian? It's sort of some conversations you don't want to get into. So instead, I just said, thank you. We learn it in school.
I think I've talked before in Hype about how often when I travel, people are like, England is far away. And I'm like, it is, but I'm from Australia. And they're like, are you though? Like, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I've got the passport and everything. And they're like, I'm not so sure about this.
Yeah. Is that really a real place?
Yeah. I was in a Simpsons episode one time, but I don't think that that's real.
No. Well, I mean, in fairness, we make up so many stories that then by the time we tell the truth, no one believes us. I was telling someone about how a possum fell down my chimney, which was very traumatic for everyone, including the possum.
And they thought you were making it up.
Well, after all the drop bear stories, they thought I was making it up.
Amy, don't tell them about the drop bears. We all know that that's a thing that exists.
Drop bears are real. They will fall from a tree onto you. Although, I should add, you know, much as the koala bear is not actually a bear, that's erroneous. Drop bears are actually not bears either, and it's not fair to call them that. They look a lot like koalas. They jump out of a tree and rip your face off. It's very dangerous.
Oh, lovely. It's true. One more reason why I will never come visit either of you. You have the big spiders and you have drop bears.
Rude, more for us.
Yeah, exactly. Really sell in Australia.
Oh, man. All right. Before this derails any further.
That's my superpower. We'll didn't try, you know?
Yeah. Between the two of us, look, this is going to be a struggle. But
it's going to be the best show ever. What are you talking about?
Well, come on. Professionalism. Yeah. We can do this.
All right, guys. Let's try and talk about some pop culture stuff. Before we do, of course, if anyone wants to get in touch with us, they can always let us know on Twitter. We are at Hypable Hype. We are Hypable Hype on Instagram. You can email us hype@hypable.com. And of course, you can always leave us a comment on the podcast post on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. Yay. Everyone go do that. Let's talk about what we've been up to. I'm going to start because I'm really excited. I saw Spotlight last night and it's amazing. I am obsessed with this movie. This is the film about the Boston Globe investigation into the Catholic Church sex abuse scandal. And it's like, it should win Best Picture. And there'll be an article on Hypable about this at some point because I just can't stop talking about it. But it's so, so phenomenal. I watched it, every single person, which was like a screening of jaded critics. At the end of it, we all just sat there in this sort of stunned silence, which doesn't usually happen. The ensemble was amazing. The music was amazing. The direction, like everything was just so, so good. I have not been able to stop thinking about it since then. And Pam, I know that you've seen it, right?
I have. I talked about it very briefly last week, but I'm so glad that you're on because you've seen it and our other host last week had not seen it. It's so wonderful. I was telling Marima that I stayed up all night like watching this movie and all the performances were stellar. And it's so hard to make a dry topic like investigative journalism interesting to everybody. But I feel like I haven't talked to anybody that has not enjoyed this. So I think that speaks for itself when like the masses as a whole are really compelled by what you're trying to portray on screen.
Oh, totally. Yeah. So it's so good. I really recommend people check it out because it's definitely out in the States and I'm pretty sure it's out in Australia next week and it's because it's still being rolled out internationally. So like check your release dates in your country, but definitely worth seeing it. I really think it could win Best Picture. It definitely should beat The Revenant, which I haven't seen and I'm not going to see.
So. I'm afraid of it. I have to see this then. I have to put it on my list.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of hilarious because it assumes I'm ever going to leave the house again. But, you know, if
maybe
I did, I would go
DVD.
And see a movie. yeah. By then I'll have written these books. Yeah. So it'd be great.
Yeah. I think on DVD in about 2020, you should be done with all
It has
with
such
all of
a
these.
Cast, though. I mean.
Yeah. Ruffalo is so good in it. Pam and I were talking about this earlier. And Rachel McAdams, I feel like I've seen her in many investigative journalist roles. She's kind of made a little career of that. I've definitely seen her play this before. But, now what's his name? I've forgotten. Michael Keaton is just amazing. Like,
he is
he
amazing.
Has made such a comeback. And in this, he is just phenomenal. And I saw an interview with the person that he plays, because, of course, they're all playing real people. And he was saying how he and Michael had dinner and it was really unnerving because he kept sort of adopting his mannerisms during it.
Like practicing.
Yeah. Like while they were talking to each other, which is like I find hilarious. And also I imagine that would be somewhat surreal as an experience. So, and then the other thing I was up to this week, I saw Star Wars again. I saw it with my mother. This is exciting because I think I talked on Hype about how my mom did not know that Darth Vader was Luke's father, and the movie has been out for 35 years. So we finally worked our way through the original trilogy and we got to see Force Awakens, which was like just the most amazing thing. She still thought his name was Hank Solo until I told her that it wasn't. And
that's amazing. So did you spoil her on Luke's parentage or you watched it with her?
No, I watched it with her. We watched the three because she really wanted to see Force Awakens. And I said to her, well, you can't watch it. You should watch the originals first because she's never seen them. And she was like, okay, well, I like Harrison Ford, so I'm on board with that. And so we watched the originals. I live tweeted it because it was just amazing and hilarious. And her and my dad, actually, he watched Empire Strikes Back with us. Neither of them knew that Darth Vader was Luke's father. And my mom, to the point where she said to me, like, but it's not true, right? You know, they're going to reveal that that's not. I was like, wait, how do you not know this? Like,
that's amazing.
35 years spoiler free. That's impossible. I can't even go like 3 weeks. Like 3 days.
You know, what I want to know is, because the thing is, I am your father is a phrase you hear a lot. You know, it's a cultural reference. What was happening for your mum every time she heard that? Did she just think these people were creepy? Like what? You know, what was the reaction?
Best question. That's so true.
I think she probably didn't notice. Like I'm still astounded by this. Every person I talk to is funny. I ran into a friend going to Spotlight actually yesterday and I was telling her this story on the train and there was this other woman just sitting nearby and she didn't have headphones in or anything. And halfway through when I was like, and then she asked me if Admiral Akbar was related to Chewie, this woman just burst out laughing. And she was like, I'm so sorry. I'm trying not to eavesdrop, but this is just too funny.
This is gold. Yeah.
And the guy behind her was giggling and I was like, I should really take this show on the road because there is a lot of material here.
You know what though? The best part is that that your dad was also unspoiled and they managed to live together unspoiled for their whole lives until earlier
this
month.
It's the only way it can work. It's got to be mutual.
And actually, the funny coda to that story is that a couple of days after we watched Empire Strikes Back, my dad phoned me and was like, oh, I'm listening to this podcast. And they just said that Darth Vader's Luke's father. I haven't heard it once in 35 years and now I've heard it twice in 1 week. Like,
and then you were like, Dad, stop listening before The Force Awakens gets spoiled for you.
Yes.
I was like, we haven't seen Return of the Jedi yet. What are you doing? But yeah.
So you said that you wanted to take her to this movie specifically so you could turn over at the pinnacle moment in this film and see her facial reaction to the big thing. So did that live up to your expectations?
You know, it did.
Was like, her reaction amazing?
It was, but she had a stronger reaction to Chewie's moment after that, which I also did.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? And
yes,
also, at the end, it was very, very funny because, and if you haven't seen Force Awakens for some reason, like skip ahead a couple minutes now, but at the end of the movie because she hates Luke, like, with a passion. Luke's is the only name she learned just because she spent a lot of time being like, oh, I hate him, his hair's so stupid. And so at the end of this, I was like, well, what's the opinion on the trio now? You know, she's like, oh, I still really like Layla. I'm like, still not her name.
And, okay.
And she's like, Luke is much better. And I was like, he doesn't say anything. And she's like, yeah, I think
that's
it helps.
That's why she's, yeah, that
and
helps
also,
a lot, I imagine.
She's like, and also the beard helps, I think. He's much more attractive than Harrison Ford now.
Just cover his face up as best you can. Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, she's basically like, look, you couldn't see his weird hair. He had a beard and he didn't say anything. Fast improvement.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, you know, I will speak about the end of this film without any spoilers at all. But I will say that the end of the film is in a is filmed in a particular location, which is really beautiful. It's off the coast of Ireland. I'm half Irish, so I was back there visiting family. And it's filmed on this island called Skellig Michael, which is this really weird kind of very steep conical island just off the coast. And there's a story there that the locals know that nobody else knows about the filming of Star Wars, which is that the crew came in before filming happened, and obviously they were very keen to make sure that nobody got any pictures or got anything that could leak out. And so they went around to all of the local fishermen and offered them €1,000 a day, which is, you know, a huge amount of money, to just to stay home from work. And all the local fishermen were like, €2,000 would be better.
What?
And eventually they settled on €1,500 a day per fisherman to not go to work. And they probably didn't have to worry about these guys spoiling, because it turns out the locals really knew how to keep a secret. And we know that because nobody told them at any stage that it was not fishing season.
Oh, my God. Is that really true?
That's amazing.
It's really true. I have it from the locals.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
I know, right?
Go Island.
Podcast.
Yeah. Star Wars exclusive. Forget Amy. Let's talk about Star Wars. That's so good. Amy, without spoiling, but did you like Force Awakens?
I did. I liked it a lot. I was so afraid. I was just, you know, I was so afraid I was going to be let down. And so I kept my expectations cautious and low. And yet I couldn't help myself. As soon as the music and the script started up at the start, I was like, oh, and we're away. And oh, I thought it was absolutely wonderful. And I think that, you know, I mean, apart from all the fan conversations, there's a conversation there around the idea that action and big franchise movies starring actors of color and women don't do well, that probably needs to be had now.
Whoa.
But, I don't know, I thought it was great. I felt like a little kid again watching it.
Oh, excellent. I'm very pleased to hear that. Okay, Pam, what have you been up to now? I've derailed the conversation entirely.
But towards Star Wars.
Yeah, so it's fine.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's fine. We're talking about big movies, and big movies were obviously the highlight of the weekend again when the Critics' Choice Awards hit Southern California this week. It's probably not like an award show that's on anybody's radar, but there were some really good stand-up moments that you should probably Google if you haven't done so yet. The first one was Judd Apatow's introduction of Amy Schumer winning the night's MVP award, which is an award they pretty much, he says, like, they made up just so she could be there. And he had some great stuff to say about, like, what constitutes a comedy and stuff. And he kind of just took everybody to the mattresses. and that was really, really great. And then Amy Schumer won Best Actress in a Comedy. And then she accepted her MVP award. And that was really wonderful. And the Cutest Speech Award goes to Jacob Tremblay. Yes, also honorary mention to my homeboy Bradley
James.
Yeah.
I saw him there. I clocked him, Pam. I clocked him for you.
I appreciate. Yeah, so that was like the cutest thing ever. Also, Room is really spectacular. So if you guys are looking for like some movies that you really like want to make sure like they're good that are getting a lot of hype, like that one I highly recommend as well.
I still need to see that.
Mm-hmm. It was great. And also, like, I think that the Critics' Choice Awards was very interesting because it got, Spotlight won. So I think that it was much more in tune to, like, what the public is really feeling about some of these movies that are getting a lot of hype.
Yeah.
Much more so than, like, academies and, like, associations and stuff like that. So
I spent all of this morning, like, looking at the films that have won the Oscars for Best Film and Director and then the Golden Globes for those categories and the Critics' Choice for those categories and for an article that I'm writing. And, like, the Golden Globes have no idea, but the Critics' Choice Awards are pretty on point. Like, I think of the last 10 years, only like two or three years, the best picture, like the big category at Critics' Choice, hasn't been the Oscar best picture winner. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, they seem to be more in touch with that voting at least.
I feel like best, Critics' Choice and also SAG are much more, right. Which is funny because
I feel like people often are like, but it won the Golden Globe. And it's like, but if you look at the categories, that actually generally has no impact.
But the Golden Globe is like, the way I describe award show season to everybody is like, you always start with like the hokiest award show, mm-hmm. right? And then you like move up and up and up in like stature of like granditude and also in like stature of like importance and statute of seriousness and all that stuff. So it's since it's at the beginning, it's not as big of a deal. But it also is very interesting to note that there's such differing opinions between the two.
Yeah.
So it is. It's a very interesting, and I'm so excited to read this article that you just teased because I'm sure you'll do it.
Justin. Oh, there's so much inside baseball in it.
I love it.
I went deep. Love it.
I also I have been reading a lot, and we'll get to the other thing that I've been reading later on in this show. But Meg Cabot has been around forever, and one of my favorite series when I was a teenager was her Mediator series, and she has so graciously decided to continue it with like two little spin-off books that tell you what the characters have been up to now that they're a little bit older. So her novella was released earlier today, and then the actual like last book in the series, that's like the seventh book, is going to come out at the beginning of February. So I'm just really excited to get back into that world. So if you're looking for something fun and quick to read and you don't mind like really fluffy, fun YA fiction with a bit of like paranormal mysteriousness thrown in there, I highly recommend her Mediator
series.
Yes.
Yes, who does not seek that?
Some people are odd. You know, I don't judge.
I mean, maybe don't listen to this podcast. I don't think you're going to like the rest of what's said on this show.
Like sci-fi, I'm there.
Yeah.
Dystopian novels, yes, please.
Yeah, Amy's like, no, sci-fi, I could take it or leave it.
Yeah,
well, and I think people know from the way everyone dies hideously in my books that I really like fluffy and – but no, I actually do. I think it's like having, you know, an antidote though.
That's definitely fluffy. There's some fluffy. Yeah.
There is.
All right, well, that's as good a segue as anything. Let's talk about some of your books. So I know the other thing that Pam has been reading this week is – dun, dun, dun. Pam, what have you been reading?
I've been reading Illuminae by Amy and Jay Kristoff, and it's wonderful, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I also, side note, when I went to pick this book up out here in San Francisco where I live, the lady that rang me up at the bookstore was so excited that I was picking this book up. And I told her, I was like, oh, it's funny you mentioned that because we'll be interviewing her on the podcast. And she like wanted to know like all the details. And she was like super stoked that you were getting some publicity. And she was like, all her books are wonderful. So you've definitely got fans all over the world, which I'm sure you already know considering you're a New York Times bestseller. But it's always nice to hear, I think.
Oh, meeting booksellers is amazing though. Cause I mean, the thing is like we writers spend most of our time, especially if we get our way, at home in our caves writing books, you know, hanging out with the dog. And then every so often, you know, you go out into the world to an event or, you know, if you're lucky on tour and you meet all these booksellers and you're sort of reminded that like when the tour is done, I go home and get back to work, you know, which is fine and good and as it should be because there's no other book otherwise. But that these booksellers are there every day pushing books that they love, like mine and other people's, on readers, and they're there every day, you know, advocating and being that person that we all met when we were kids who made us enthusiastic about reading. And you just, I don't know, you hug a lot of booksellers on tour.
That's
they're just amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice. It's all warm and fuzzy in here now.
But they really are, though. Like they're really,
I agree.
Like they're advocating for you for any other reason other than that they love books and, you know, luckily for you, they loved yours.
Yeah. I used to work at a library when I was in college and I did the same thing. And it's like so nice to like do that. And then people come back and they're just so happy that they found like a new book that they loved. And you're happy because you shared something that you loved. And it's like, it's a really nice community, the book series, like the book community and stuff.
My primary school librarian still comes to every one of my book launches.
Oh,
you know, none of it would be happening without her. For sure.
That's adorable.
Yeah, she's awesome. But I'm glad you liked it because this would be quite the awkward podcast.
I thought it was terrible. I'm very excited. I was lucky enough to read Illuminae after I basically just harassed Amy into giving it to me in like June of last year, and wrestled another young adult author for that opportunity. So that was good. But yeah, I just love this book so much. I've been raving about this book on like every podcast we've done since then. But I'll rave about it some more because I love books that are written in this style. I love these like collected, the documents and everything. And I also love that there are sections in this that are designed in a way that I have never seen in a book before. And I don't want to spoil things for people who haven't read it, but like, you know, there's a character who like is a pilot at one point, and the words on the page like are in these beautiful spirals of the flight paths, and it's just so beautiful, which is why I keep saying to everyone that I would really recommend they pick up the hard copy just so you can kind of drink it in front of you.
Yeah, it's a book that's good in hardcover. Yeah. I should add the dog has just come over to find out why I'm hiding my face in my hands. He's like, "Are you okay in there? What's going on? Are you eating? Wait, are you eating something?"
Where is mine? The dog can be on the podcast. It's equal opportunity.
So loves to chat. But no, I mean, you're right. We were so lucky with the design because we just kept thinking that they would tell us no. We kept coming up with crazier and crazier ideas about, you know, well, what if we did this? And we were in the end, we were just trying to find out where the line was. And our editor's worse than we are. We never found it. She's going, yeah. Well, and then she challenged us to come up with, you know, with when we were working on Gemina, which is in the design stages now, it's all edited. And, you know, we were doing the design stuff. She said to us, just go crazy. And if you go too far, I'll tell you. And so we went crazy with, and I'm not allowed to tell you what it is, but this design aspect, this type of document that I'm incredibly excited about, that I totally put in there as a like, I know where the line is, I finally found it and we're over it. And she's like, okay, I'll see what I can do. And then we got it. So I don't know what we're going to do for book three.
Don't tease me like this.
They will send a team from America if we say it in public.
Oh my goodness.
Oh wow. Okay.
But I'm sure you won't miss it when we announce it.
Okay. All right. Well, so for anyone who hasn't read it yet, a brief synopsis of Illuminae. This isn't giving it away because this is definitely on the blurb. There are these two characters, Katie and Ezra. Katie dumps Ezra awkwardly, then their like illegal mining colony that they live on in space is attacked. Bad times.
So she thinks she's having a bad morning, and then she finds out what a bad afternoon looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's told through this dossier of all of these documents, and you get their two perspectives. And there are so many. The way I keep selling it to everyone, there's just so many twists in this. Every time you think you know where this is going, you absolutely do not know where it's going. And even if you are like, I know there'll be a twist, so it must be going this way. No, trust me, you don't know. So just read it. It's fantastic. It came out in October of last year.
Yeah, that's right.
And the second one is coming out this year. Amy does this great thing where she releases books every year. It's like amazing.
Often twice.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. And then this is going to be a trilogy. So then the next one will be 2017, I presume.
Yep, that is the plan. We're about a third of the way through writing book three at the moment.
Oh my God, so exciting.
Well, you have to start early because, I mean, we actually ended up stopping book one right before it went to print and adding in a few things that we realized we were going to need for book three, which was exactly why we started writing book three early. And does mean that if you have an arc and you can find the differences between your advance copy and your final copy, then you will know some things about book three.
Wait. I have one of
Merima.
Those.
You're going to need to buy an actual, like, printed copy.
Oh, well, another one.
Yeah, exactly. Compare and contrast.
Oh, man. All right. Well, there's a project for me to get going with. And also, we found out now, I can't remember if this was the end, I think this might have been right at the end of last year, that Brad Pitt's making a movie of Illuminae, no big deal.
Well, I mean, maybe, until they are filming things, it's not happening. But, you know, you try to keep your hopes tamped down.
But at what point in this process do you get to have dinner with Brad Pitt and Angelina
Jolie?
That's
what I keep asking.
Right. Because I feel like at some point, as the author...
Surely, right? No, we work with producers from Plan B Entertainment, which is his company. So they've made stuff like Selma, 12 Years a Slave, World War Z, like a variety of really cool films. So we work with their producers and geez, they actually consult us a lot, far more than we thought. Yeah.
Well, I feel like this would be a really interesting project, especially because the translation of the format of the book to film would be really interesting.
I think so, because, I mean, the plot itself you can certainly see fairly easily how to put into a film, but if you don't want to lose the something extra that comes with the format, then you've got to think really creatively about how to film it.
Yeah, and there are also a couple moments I could think of without – no spoilers – that would be very difficult to do – when you're filming, because you can kind of mask things and do certain things when you're just reading documents mm-hmm. that you can't do when you're actually seeing things play out on the screen. So that would also be really interesting.
Yeah, oh, they've taken on a project.
Yeah, I hope they've got some free time on their hands. Okay, and then I want to run through some of your other things because, as I mentioned, you kind of have a lot going on. The final book in your Starbound trilogy, this is the one you write with Megan Spooner. That came out in December of last year.
It did.
And these are kind of like the first book is sort of Titanic in space. Is that a fair description? Yeah,
weirdly, we never thought of that while we were writing it, but it's been that ever since. And, I mean, I do think that's – we describe it as Titanic in space – if Rose and Jack got shipwrecked on the island from Lost.
Yes, that is – oh, yeah, I like that. That's very good. And then it kind of turns into this sort of sprawling space odyssey, wars and rebellions and love stories and everything. I don't know. It's because it's not really – I mean, it is a romance, but it's not like really a romance. But then it's like this kind of space sci-fi opera. But then it's like there's a lot going on. I would definitely recommend –
there's a lot going on. That's the way you can describe almost everything I write. There's one thing that they've all got in common.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's funny. I'm never nervous when a book comes out because, you know, I mean, I've done the best I can and hopefully people will like it and some people won't. And that's actually fine too. I don't like everything that I watch or read or listen to. You know, all I ask is that they don't come and scream it at me and they're welcome to not like things. But I was kind of a little bit nervous about their Fractured Light because when people have read a whole trilogy with you, you know, I mean, if people invest in book one, they're going to like it or they're not. If they like it, they'll continue. But by the time they get to book three, they've put time into the trilogy and they've been waiting for a couple of years and – you know, you really want to do the right thing by them. You really want to make sure that they get the payoff that they're hoping for. But at the same time, you can't just write what you think people want. You have to stay true to what you're doing and write what you came to write.
Yeah, that's interesting. I sort of hadn't really thought about that. As an entitled reader, I try not to think about the opinions of the author and how, like, my reaction might impact them.
No, well, and you shouldn't is the thing. No, but you shouldn't. You should, yeah, you know, you should know. Just be reading it.
Of course, but there are people who have written it at the other side, so, you know.
Sure, and, you know, we wrote this – as we wrote this one together, it was – I mean, Meg and I are incredibly close. You know, we lived together for years. We still somehow managed to get across the world to see each other every year. And, you know, when we wrote this one through, you know, deaths in our immediate family, through, you know, really serious illness, through – just, you know, everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and stuff that's really hard and emotional going wrong, not just, you know, well, this is inconvenient or I'm really tired. So, you know, we really kind of had to take it in turns to carry each other through this one. And I don't know, because we were tired, we put so much of our hearts into it, and just the reaction from readers has kind of blown me away. It's been so special.
Well, that's good. I know Kyle, who isn't on it, he's read the first one and Selena as well. And I know Selena was really into it. Actually, Selena's really into The 100. And so I think I was like, I should have recommended this to her earlier because, there is a definite connection in a theme there.
Teenagers having terribly, terribly bad days in space.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
also the way you can describe almost everything I write. I think about it.
and these Broken Stars, now this was sort of, this was picked up for TV. Is there like news on that front? Is there stuff happening with that?
Yes. There's a lot happening and I'm not allowed to talk about any of it.
But that's fine. As long as it's still happening, it's still going on.
more happening than has ever been happening before.
Oh, very exciting.
So it is very exciting right now. And I'm kind of just squirming around in my chair because I want to tell secrets. But so before we went on, yeah.
We'll wait till we stop recording and then you can tell us all of it. Exactly. We'll just hold it over the listeners.
Well, I was just going to ask, when something like this happens, do you kind of have to stop yourself from fan casting in your head? Because I know with my favorite books and stuff, I have to stop myself from doing that so I'm not disappointed later. But is that something that you kind of try and stay away from in your own mind? Or do you get a say in any of that? Or how much involvement do you have in the project at all, if you can say?
Our opinion gets asked at every stage, but I sort of simultaneously I will happily give my opinion, but I don't actually want them to put too much weight on my opinion because this is not my area of expertise and it is their area of expertise. So they know what they're doing. I sort of want an expert in charge, not me. But yeah, they certainly ask us a lot, and we do cast for every character that we write, mainly so we're describing the same person. But often the person we cast is a model, or if it's an actor, it's this person, but only in this photo. Not that, you know how there's some really different. So, a lot of our choices would not be particularly suitable.
That's such a fandom thing. I love that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's what we do too. We're with Fantastic Beasts, it's this person from this movie.
Yeah.
Hair.
Yeah. In this outfit. Exactly. Exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
In this mode of being.
Oh man. Okay. And then.
Or if you're Mara's mom, it's Mark Hamill. But yeah. Beard. only in the pictures with a beard.
Yeah. Minus dialogue. So you and Meg are writing another series together.
We totally are. Oh, my goodness, we're having so much fun.
This is the Unearthed series?
It is.
Is this a trilogy?
It's a duology.
Oh,
it's
okay. Okay.
So this one, we were on tour for Their Shattered World, and we were super tired because we were near the end, and we were in our hotel room in New York and channel surfing, and an Indiana Jones marathon came on, and, that was us set for the day. And we were watching it and we were like, man, love Indiana Jones. If only someone would write a book like Indiana Jones. And then we looked at each other and we were like, wait, we write books. And so that's kind of where it started. So we pitched it as Indiana Jones teams up with Lara Croft in space. And that's what it is.
Oh, my God. I can't wait for this until 2017. What are you doing?
I know. I don't want you to wait. I'm so pumped. I love it so much. It's so fun. It's so fun.
That's amazing. So have you got that kind of planned out for the two books then?
Pretty planned out. Writers talk about being pantsers or plotters, whereas pantsers write by the seat of their pants and plotters plot it out first. And Meg's more in the pantser direction and I'm more in the plotter direction. But I heard Victoria Schwab, another author, use this great phrase, join the dotses. And that's kind of what Meg and I do. We sort of know roughly where it's going to head and sort of how it's going to end, and then we'll have fun filling in the dots together.
Oh, that's fun. Actually, that's kind of the best of both worlds, huh? Because then you can be flexible and leaves the fun.
The fun of discovery.
And I get to the end and go, but where was this going? What's happening?
Yeah. Yes, and why am I here and why is it dark? Yes. Poking me with a stick.
Okay, that's a whole other situation.
But yes, we are just having so much fun writing it. Oh, yeah, it's going to be great.
And you have your own series as well? Is this like a sole authored series? What are you – oh, my God. Okay, sorry, I'm trying to calm down. But I was saying to Amy before we started recording, if she could just give George R. R. Martin some tips. Oh, J.K. Rowling, I'm still waiting for that encyclopedia because this is a ridiculous amount of books for a person to be writing. This is the Elementals trilogy.
I am quite busy right now, true.
And what's this one about?
This one is middle grade. So this is my first story for younger readers, which I'm super excited about because that's actually what I used to write before I got published, when I was just writing for fun. So this one is kind of for maybe 8 to 12s, and it's a fantasy. It is set in a world where you have regular humans and then you have two tribes of humans who can shapeshift into wolves and dragons, and they are mortal enemies. Have not been forever, but they are since a fairly recent war. And our hero and heroine are a pair of twins who one can shift into a wolf and one can shift into a dragon, and that's not meant to be possible.
Oh. And
hijinks ensue.
Yes. I like the fantasy bent on that. That sounds fun.
It's heaps of fun. It's sort of semi-inspired by Iceland. I mean, not entirely, not least because there are not wolves in Iceland, but that sort of landscape. So I'm, I actually get to go there in May to research, which I'm super excited about.
So when is the research trip booked?
yeah, coming up in the second half of May after some other travel I have to do. And my husband was pretty sure before I had the best job in the world, but, you know, if he wasn't, he is now because he gets to come.
Right. Now he's like, so I've always wanted to go to Berlin. If you could just set a book kind of in that sort of landscape, that would be great.
See, so you're joking, but I know he is actually at the point of making requests now.
Yeah. I mean, you've got enough books. You can slip it in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just a chapter here and something else here. I'm just saying, like, I'm sure you could fit in. I think that's how writing works, right? You just kind of choose a place that you want to visit and then write about it. I'm pretty sure.
It's what I do.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's what other people do, but sure.
Well, you're a New York Times bestselling author, so I think you're
right. Also, it must be right.
It must be right. Exactly. Okay. Well, that's a lot for people to put on their to-read list, but if you're going to start somewhere, I definitely recommend that you start with Illuminate. It's really good, and I would like to talk to people about it, so, like, please hit me up on Twitter. Maybe don't tweet at the Hype Twitter account, though, because I don't think Selena has finished it yet. So that would be mean. No spoilers.
Don't make an enemy of Selena. It's not safe.
Exactly. But tell me. I've read it many times. I want to talk about it.
Well, and I will add, for people who like Illuminae or Broken Stars, in the next issue of my newsletter, I am going to be putting in some deleted scenes, which I made the mistake of mentioning on tour and then got shouted at by many, many fans until I agreed to release them. So we're still narrowing down what the Illuminae one will be, and the Broken Stars one will be the caterpillar scene in which Lilac encounters her first ever bug.
Oh, okay. So how does one get your newsletter?
Just go to my website, which is my name, amykaufman.com, and it's right there on the front page.
Excellent. All right. Well, there's some homework for people. And I think it's time to talk about some news. So let's do some of that.
You mean there are people other than us?
I know. It's crazy. Well, we're going to talk about it again. So it's really still us. It's fine. Okay, so I'm start off with a bit of sad news, very, very sad news that broke last week. We lost the lovely, amazing, wonderful Alan Rickman, unfortunately, at the age of 69. This was on January 14th to cancer. Of course, most people know him as Professor Snape, but he was an incredibly well-regarded actor of film and stage and a director, and by all accounts on all of the tributes that have been pouring out, just like the world's best human being. The actor who played Oliver Wood released this really, really beautiful tribute that made me, even in my little robot heart, really, really sad. So yeah, this is just, you know, this is just, life is just not nice. This is really horrible.
There was just nothing good about it at all. And I mean, the stuff that he did, I mean, you know, Sense and Sensibility for me was, you know, a formative experience. But then you'd see him doing stuff like, you know, Kevin Smith's film Dogma, which if people haven't seen, they entirely should, in which he plays Metatron, the voice of God, and is so irreverent and so black and so funny and so different to the other things you see. He was just so talented.
Yeah, I mean, him in Hitchhiker's Guide, he does the voice of Marvin, the depressed robot, which I just adore. I just adore
it's
that.
Just
yeah.
Really. I think, you know, Emma Thompson put out, because they were such close friends and collaborated, you know, over and over, put out a statement saying, "We shall not see his like again." And it was one of those things where I think you sort of feel for once like people aren't hyping it up. We actually lost someone really unique.
Absolutely.
And to be honest with you guys, I feel like people are still in disbelief. Like every time I see this, I can't believe it. Like I still think that we're going to get more Alan Rickman, you know, mm-hmm. in the back of my mind. Like I just, because my brain cannot comprehend like an acting world without somebody like him in it, because he is so one of a kind.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no one that you can think of who can do those roles.
Right. Exactly. And just like everything from like his distinct voice to like line delivery. And it's just, wow. I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah. What, I mean, what he could do with, you know, silence.
I know.
You know, he didn't even have to speak.
Exactly.
And I think also for, like, you know, sort of our generation that who grew up with Harry Potter and the Harry Potter films, regardless of how you felt about the films, like, they just had such a central place in your life that that absence is seems just so loud and so noticeable. And that's something really difficult to kind of reconcile because, you know, obviously Richard Harris died while they were making the Harry Potter films, but they'd only shot two and he had, you know, a smaller role and we were also younger when that happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, now, like, just dealing with things, it's, yeah, it's tough.
Well, and I think, I mean, although, you know, Richard Harris was not so elderly that people weren't, you know, terribly shocked and sad to lose him. But I think to us, as we were younger and he had white hair and a white beard. And I think being younger, I thought he must be very old because he had white hair and a white beard. And it was not the same shock as losing someone like Alan Rickman, who you didn't think of in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really hard. So I would definitely recommend people. Yeah. A lot of the tributes, I would say, I've forgotten his name. Sean Biggerstaff. His is beautiful. Emma Thompson's is beautiful. There's a lot of them online. It's just really nice to see everyone talking about not only him as an actor, but just, you know, their experiences with him that we perhaps didn't know about before. And it's a tough time. So I think we'll leave that one there and go into the rest of the news. Of course, the other major story from the past week were the Oscar nominations. Now,
talk about being depressed.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so look, I'm not going to read through them all, but I will read the Best Picture ones just for information if people haven't checked them out or if perhaps they've been distracted by the rest of the controversy surrounding this. So nominations for Best Picture, we have The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max Fury Road, represent The Martian, the world's funniest comedy, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight. Now, good, great, that's all fine. The next thing that happened was the reemergence of this Oscars So White hashtag, which we saw last time when there were hardly any nominations for people of color. And this year there are no nominations for people of color. So it's actually gone backwards. And now we're seeing people like Jada Pinkett Smith and Spike Lee are going to boycott the Oscars. Of course, Chris Rock is hosting this year, which is, you know, interesting. There's been a statement from the Academy president, who is also a woman of color, I believe, who is saying that they're going to rethink how they recruit members to make sure that it's more diverse because, you know, they don't think that it's changing or whatever.
Well, I mean, you know, I read an article about this the other day in which they said that there's about 6,000 Academy members who vote and we don't know who they are. They've started disclosing recently some of the people they've invited in, presumably because they are diverse and they want the publicity for, you know, look who we invited in. But in 2012, the LA Times studied it and found, so, you know, admittedly we're going back 4 years, but that's not that long, of 6,000 Academy members, 94% were white and 77% were male.
Right.
And we act surprised that this has happened. Why?
Yeah, well, exactly. I think they also say the average age is 63.
Yeah. So I'm just reading up on why Straight Outta Compton didn't do better. And a lot of the kind of anonymous quotes from insiders were people saying, I don't think that most of them watched it because they're just so not the demographic, or more to the point, they didn't see themselves as the demographic.
Right.
And it's so sad, you know, because I've talked to like older people about this movie, Straight Outta Compton, because I'm huge into music, documentaries, and like biopics and things like that. So this was like up my alley anyway. And so many people, like, especially in the LA area, were just like, well, I don't want to see that. It's like, it hits too close to home with all the riots and what's going on right now. But I'm just like, by turning a blind eye and saying, I don't want to see this because
it doesn't make it go away.
It doesn't, exactly. It doesn't make it go away. And it's not right. Like, you should be happy that it's showcasing a spotlight on something that has happened and is still happening. And like, barring like social justice issues aside, it was a wonderful movie, and the acting was superb. Like, I was shocked because it was definitely like, it was so well done. And regardless of the fact that like maybe some of the parts like weren't like they glazed over some parts that were, you know, might've been important or what have you. There was a little bit of controversy over that. Like you can't deny that like on an acting perspective, like all of these kids who are relatively unknown did a really great job portraying these people.
Yeah. And I think the only nomination it got was screenwriting, and the screenwriters are white.
They were all white. Yeah.
And you know, there's this fantastic article up on Hyperbole that Ariana wrote, and I would definitely recommend people read because she's got a lot of it's very like I can't even believe I have to say this. It's very balanced. Like, you know, she really explains why the system fails rather than just saying why it's frustrating. But she also expresses why it's really frustrating for her. And you know, as someone like very invested in seeing like more diverse people on screen, it's a really good read. But you know, I think the thing that people are yelling about a lot of roles straight out of Compton is one. Creed is another one.
Right.
Because Sylvester Stallone is nominated.
So odd.
Yeah.
Like Michael B. Jordan. Like they've seen the movie, right?
Went to see it because it was a Rocky movie, so they would. Exactly. But then Michael B. Jordan gets nothing.
Exactly.
So here's the thing, you guys. I really think that sometimes the Oscars, and like we've seen them do this with Lord of the Rings, they go, oops, we should have given this person an award like way long ago. We missed our chance. So we're going to throw them a bone now.
Like Judi Dench winning an Oscar for 2 minutes in Shakespeare in Love.
Right.
I feel like they did that with Judi Dench. They did that with Jennifer Lawrence, who is very talented, probably should have won for Winner's Bone instead of Silver Linings Playbook. They did that for, they've done that for the Lord of the Rings. Like none of the other movies got anything. And then they were like, this is our last chance. So we might as well award them with all the awards for Return of the King. And I feel like the same thing's happening with Sylvester Stallone. Like no disrespect to him. And he did a great job in the film, but just to completely discredit Michael B. Jordan's work on that, slap in the
maybe
face.
They because, are.
Yeah,
they're like, whoa, Sylvester might not have many more movies in him. Quickly, we better do this before it's too late.
And the same thing happened with not to like bring up old things, but like the fact that David Oyelowo was not nominated for Selma last year was also
seriously,
because I thought that was wonderful. I don't think even like was Ava DuVernay nominated. I'm not sure if she was or wasn't, but again, like somebody that has severely been just like completely snubbed, and she's done some great work like Selma aside. So it's not a matter of that the fact that there's no talent, it's just that whoever is like the gatekeepers are so narrow-minded. And that's something that like, you know, nobody can negate. And I guess you could argue that it's a matter of opinion, but It when like the public and not necessarily just like one group of people are all speaking out about this, like then you know you have a problem, because it's not just like the Black community that's saying like where's our representation. It's everyone. And I can't even imagine, sorry, this is the last thing I'll say, I can't even imagine being Cheryl Boone Isaacs right now, because she is Black and she's the first Black and the first woman president of the Academy, and she has to stand up there and release all statements about something that she probably has like very little control over, because she's not picking the movies.
Right. And she sort of inherited the system as well.
Right. Exactly. And No. I was just going to say, I saw her, I was interning in LA when like the first year that she got, she was, elected to this position, and she gave this beautiful speech at this woman of color in movies luncheon that they do every year. Essence magazine does this, and she talked about how she remembers seeing clips of Hattie winning for Gone with the Wind for Best Supporting Actress, and how like it was so moving, like it was so striking to her to see her having to walk like all the way from the back of the Kodak Theater to like accept her award, and how like she can't believe that we've come so far, because like that Sunday she would be sitting in the front row when the first Black woman had to sit all the way in the back. And it's like, I just, for somebody to have been moved that like by that situation that much at such a young age, I just can't imagine being her like now, where they're still like, you're still seeing that problem. It's just, it flabbergasts me.
Yeah. You know, I do tend to think, and I mean, I try to be a bit careful around this, because like, Marama, I'm sure you have the same problem I do, which is that we're not American.
Right.
And Australia has its own racial politics and racial issues, which are just as problematic, but in like slightly different ways because we're a different, you know, we have a different history and we're a different people. So sometimes when I wade into American racial politics, I think, do I really, you know enough about this to comment? But I think it's a pretty safe comment to make to say that on one hand, yes, I think it is definitely the gatekeepers. I think that the fact that the Academy is overwhelmingly white, male and older means that their tastes, not the public's tastes, are being reflected. But I do actually think that it is also that roles are not going to actors of colour in the numbers in which they should be.
Oh, 100%.
You know, that they're being cut off in both possible ways. Because, I mean, John Boyega's my boy. I mean, I think he should literally win everything, including best cinematography.
I love him.
But, you know.
Viola Davis did the speech where she said, like, you can't win an award for a role that doesn't exist.
Exactly. You know? And so, you know, and I, there's been no movement on that front either. And that there are directors who could be making inroads on that. And there are direct. I mean, we've seen a huge change in publishing in a very short period of time. And yet books, I mean, you know, we're sure we have a long way to go, but I don't think anyone would argue that we're not making forward progress in terms of the diversity in our authors and, you know, what we write about. And, you know, yet books do take 2 years from purchase to publication. So we do move on a slow timescale like movies, and yet we're managing to get the Titanic slowly turning around. It's possible.
Yeah. I 100% agree. And I think that, you know, because there is such a limited amount of roles and, you know, like this is obviously an issue that extends to women and non-heterosexual people, but like this campaign is really focused on people of color. And so that's where like this conversation should remain. When there are so few roles and then they still don't get recognized, like I can't imagine the frustration that people must feel, you know, in that circumstance when they're, you know, there's so few, but you go, well, at least, you know, Michael B. Jordan's going to be nominated, or at least Ava DuVernay is going to get Best Director, which he was not nominated for, you know, and then it still doesn't happen. Like, it's basically outrageous.
Right.
And it feels intentional at that point where it's to and this level.
We're also not even saying, like, oh, they have to nominate this person because they're Black. Like, they have to check that box. We're literally talking about roles that deserve to be
that just
nominated
by any standard, by any standard in any universe, all other considerations aside, they were just outstanding performances.
Right. I'm not saying that like Scary Movie 3 or whatever should be nominated for an Oscar. Like,
I think that was great. I don't know what you're talking about. That's a great movie.
Well, back the truck up, lady. Yeah, come on.
You got to Soul Plane. Okay. No, I'm serious though. It's just like they're movies, and I think that like I'm not really 100% on this, but I believe that I read somewhere that like Star Wars, The Force Awakens could not be nominated for certain things because of like the secrecy behind it. And they didn't want to like divvy
put
out
the advanced copies.
Right. Right. So they could only be nominated for certain things from what I remember reading.
Yeah.
Again, if you're listening and you know something different, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I read that too.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, I'm kind of joking about John Boyega. Like, he was wonderful, you know.
Also not joking, exactly. But I think that, like, Star Wars sets a great precedent for what film can be in the future, where, like, when you have, like, blind casting and stuff like that, and you don't really, like, specify, like what a race of a person needs to be, like, I think that that's very wonderful. And I really hope that we see that more going forward, because I feel like a lot of times right now when you look at like the films, like something like Selma or something where it's like, it gives a lot of opportunities to like Black actors, and that's great. But I would like to see like a film world where we move away towards that. And it's not necessarily like Black actors can only be successful in like Black dramas about Black history. Like I would like to see, you know, people of color be like more like an Oscar Isaac, where he's like, so like his race doesn't matter because he is a man of many hats and can play anything. And you don't question what he is or where he comes from, because he sells you so hard on what he's doing. And I feel like so many talented actors have the like ability to do that. And I hope that one day they get the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. I am so glad that you are on this episode, Pam, because like, I feel like you have good opinions on this. But we should move on, because otherwise our entire show will be this.
So
and we'll just be anger and grief.
Right. And surprisingly, there is some other news to talk about, but I would definitely recommend everyone go and read Ariana's article. And there's like a lot of coverage of this on Hyperball, but her column is really, really great. So we will link that somewhere and we'll tweet it out. Okay, happier news, I guess, kind of. There was a new Suicide Squad trailer and they paid a lot of money to use Bohemian Rhapsody in it. And it's really good. The more I see from this, the more I think, like, I think this movie's going to be good. And that's very surprising to me because I thought it was going to be terrible. But now I'm kind of more excited for this than Batman versus Superman, which has my girl Wonder Woman in it. So, yeah, that's weird. I don't know. Pam, did you like this?
I loved this from a very nerdy music standpoint. I just thought that it was edited so well with like the gunshots, like going to the beat of the drums, and just like everything was so well done. And like the song fits really well with like these characters. And it really gives like fans a better taste of kind of what you're dealing with all these people, which is something that we didn't get too much of in the teaser that was released around Comic-Con. So.
Yeah.
I'm really, really excited for this. I think this is going to be a really fun film.
Yeah, the more I see, it's just like a bit camper and a bit sillier and a bit like more tongue in cheek, everything that they release from it, which is really fun. And also they've done the music so well in these. I, of course, now can't remember what the song was that was in the Comic-Con trailer, but it was like a cover and it was really haunting. And, you know, to go from that to this, and like literally the entire trailer is set to Bohemian Rhapsody. Like there is nothing else in it. It's, yeah, it's kind of amazing.
So it's like the new Star Trek Sabotage trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, is that the thing that we do now? Is that what we,
maybe,
is that the thing?
I mean, no complaints. Cause I mean, the thing is, in a way, I mean, okay, so bad trailers just give you every joke in the movie and then you don't need to go. But good trailers are less, they're kind of, I think, like good book covers and good blurbs, in that they're less about telling you what happens in it and more about selling you on the mood.
Right.
Like this book or this movie is going to feel like this. And if they do it well, then they're going to draw in exactly the people who want something that makes them feel like this.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. No, I think you're so right. And this really seems to capture, hopefully this is what the film is like. It's hard to tell in advance.
Well, but see, this is the thing, is that if everyone goes and it doesn't make them feel like Bohemian Rhapsody, there will be wrath. But I don't, I'm kind of nervous about it, which is so funny because I get this thing all the time where readers like love a book and then they say, oh, I'm so scared the second one is going to suck. And I'm always like, hey, the first one was good, you know, trust me, I did it right once. I will almost certainly do it right again. Like, why so frightened? And then I go and do exactly the same thing on movies where I'm like, I want it so bad that I have to fear the terribleness so that so it'll exceed expectations. I can't take the crash if it's not good.
Yeah, this is true.
So I should probably lay off readers.
Yeah.
Is where
I mean,
I'm.
You know, you do you, Amy. Whatever you feel like. Okay, so we'll keep an eye on Suicide Squad. That is out in August, so not that far away. And Australia represent, Margot Robbie looks amazing in it. So
yes.
You're welcome, world. Okay, Pam, what have you got for us?
So this is really good news if you're a fan of the Chronicles of Narnia, because we will be getting a new movie. The Silver Chair is officially happening.
I want you to know how hard I just had to try not to scream into my microphone and deafen everyone. Oh,
isn't
my
it
God.
Isn't exciting, though?
I am like rocking and grabbing the table white-knuckled. Oh, my God.
We are breaking
I'm so excited.
Live here, people.
Awesome.
I'm on deadline. I haven't left the house in a long time. Oh, my God, this is exciting.
You're going to be so caught up in pop culture now.
Yes, I know. I can stay inside the house for another month delighting
exactly.
All my editors.
And then you can come back and we'll tell you everything that you've missed.
Perfect. All right, let's do that.
All right,
Silver Chair, really?
The Silver Chair. Now here, don't get your hopes up if you're like super attached to the original actors, because they're kind of treating it as a reboot, which is to say that
it's been a
we
while.
Will exactly. So we'll get like characters that we know and love from the series if you're a fan of the Chronicles of Narnia. But you're also going to see a lot of new actors portraying this stuff. So that is really exciting news if you're a fan of that series, which I know a lot of us are. And there's not much news about like when this is going to come out or anything like that. But the good news is that like it sounds like it's happening. So head over to highbible.com if you want to read the full kind of details from the producer, Mark Gordon. and you'll get all the information you need about that. But yeah, overall, very exciting news. And I'm sure a lot of people that are listening are going to be just as excited as you are. So.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'll be right back. I have to go to Hyperball now and read the... Oh my goodness, I'm so excited.
After the show, after the show.
Ignore that clicking sound. It's nothing.
So speaking of book to film adaptations, we've got a book to TV adaptation. Neil Patrick Harris has officially signed on to star in Netflix's Series of Unfortunate Events TV show adaptation. And this is something that sparked a lot of controversy overall in the Series of Unfortunate Events fandom. So he's going to be playing Count Olaf, who is, of course, like the big bad in the series. And similar to, I guess, Jim Carrey, you've got kind of like this funny, hokey type guy who's going to be playing like an evil madman. So I'm really, really interested to see how this plays out because I really enjoyed the movie. And I read a couple of the books with my brothers and sisters, but it wasn't a series I ever continued on my own because I feel like at the time that I started reading it, I was a little bit like too old to really like get into it. So yeah, that was just sense. Me being like a loser teenager. I was like, this is too childish, even though I was like obsessed with Harry Potter at the time. So that makes no sense. Anyway, I digress. if you're excited, you're excited. But if you're not, you're totally not alone. So,
but wait, people think he's not serious enough. Like a series of unfortunate events is not a drama.
I was going to say, it is a very, very funny book.
Try to marry her in the first one or something?
No, I just think people don't like him. I don't think that it was like he's not serious enough. I just think that some people weren't happy with the casting choices from what I heard like around
those Twitter people like are that. Wrong.
Right.
I think he's really good.
Do anything.
Yeah, same.
So they're actually
absolutely anything.
They're going to start filming this in March in Vancouver, so we're probably going to get more casting news coming soon. So keep an eye on that as well.
Hey, Amy, any of your books set in Vancouver? Maybe you could do a little recon for us.
Well, they weren't, but now I'm interested.
Hmm.
I was about to say, like, I traditionally don't go places that are cold except Iceland and space, so that's patently not true.
I was about to be like, okay.
Try again.
Google that a little more.
So we've got one more bit of TV news for you guys, which I'm particularly excited about. Prison Break is officially coming back to Fox. So if you're a fan of that show, This is great news. Fox officially announced that Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell, who played Michael Scofield and Lincoln Burrows respectively, are coming back for the series. And it sounds like it's going to be like a 6-episode run. So we're kind of going to get a good look at what happens after the final season aired of this. There was a made-for-TV movie or like a straight-to-DVD movie, but I guess they're completely discrediting what happens there, which is good because some characters might not be able to return if they kind of like stayed along those lines. Mm. Exactly. So this is pretty cool news, and it's still developing, but the good news is that looks like all our favorites are coming back, so that's going to be really fun.
See, I think that's I think 6 episodes is perfect because, you know, they don't have to save anything for later. They can throw it all in, you know, blow everything up, do all the drama. And I'm kind of confident because the actors are coming back.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like they've got one and they're sort of spinning off to be like, here's the new adventures of, like, I don't know. I hope.
Exactly. And like a lot of the original showrunners are back too. So I think it's going to make for a really, really good wrap up to the series. And I love, like we've talked about this before, but this new trend where like shows are able to breathe new life and you are able to find out what happened to some of your favorite fictional characters like long after they've left. It's just so cool. So I'm really excited to see what they do with this.
It's kind of like getting amazing fan fiction all these years later.
Right?
Like, is the future we imagine true?
Exactly.
I mean, Gilmore Girls, so...
I know. Oh, my gosh. It's going to be so great.
I got to see the set when I was in L.A.
How fun is it?
So fun. And it was, I don't know, there's always this disconnect for me when I see sets. You know, when I see the set of something and I'm like, oh, you can go right through it. I mean, like, I know that, but...
They're still disappointed that Stars Hollow isn't like a whole town and a whole place that you can just live in.
Actually, that kind of is. Like, the town's
It is, but except then the houses are like, and then you go around the back and there's a different house on the back of this house. Right, and you're like,
But the town square is still intact, and they actually, fun fact, they use it for Pretty Little Liars. It's the same set. So I've been like watching that, and it's so weird because I'm like, That's if you not know. Rosewood. It's Stars Hollow.
It's very awesome. Well, and we got to go on the, I mean, we weren't doing anything fancy. We were on the Warner Brothers tour that anyone can go on, but they take you through the Pretty Little Liars set. And so they take us through, and I was with a friend who's also a writer. And so we were immediately like checking out all the books on the bookshelves and like, you know, oh, look, you know, look who's there and look who's not. And, you know, touching things and taking photographs. And then we get out the other end and they're like, now remember, that was one of the sets where you weren't allowed to take any photos and they were watching you on security cameras. So, you know, hopefully you guys behaved. And we're all like, take us to the next attraction quickly, quickly.
Yeah. You're like,
take off your hat, mingle with the crowd. Oh, God.
Yeah. Everyone put on your dark sunglasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really fun studio tour. I've done that. Pam, did we do that together? Who did I do that with?
No, I didn't do it with you. I did it accidentally. I kind of took that tour illegally by myself.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember. Oh, no, you know what? I went with Kyle. I went with Kyle and Kristen, another writer from High School. No.
Back up the track to where Pam's taking it illegally.
So I went on a set visit for Hypeable to WB Studios, and I was with a friend that, because we were doing a live show taping after all the press stuff, and it was really dark, and I was like, we could go back that way to the car, or we could just walk around like we know where we're going and do this thing. So we ended up in a lot of random places, and that's when we stumbled across like Stars Hollow, and she was a big Pretty Little Liars fan, like, and I hadn't seen the episode, like the season yet or like the series yet, so she was like, it's Rosewood. I'm like, no, that's Stars Hollow, and it's probably good because I feel like now that I've seen part of Pretty Little Liars, like stumbling upon a deserted Rosewood set in the dark would just really give me the
be a whole other experience, right?
Exactly. So for me, I was like, it's so whimsical, it's great, it's magical. She was like, where's A? I need to leave right now. So it was a really good time. But I'm pretty sure all the security cameras were like, what are these two girls doing? They need to leave right now.
pictures of your faces up. Us. Yeah, they taped by the door. So if you ever go back.
Yeah, that's it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's it for news for this week. If anyone has any thoughts on any of the stories we discussed, or you want to know what we thought about something else we didn't mention, you can let us know on Twitter at HyperbuleHype or leave a comment on this post on hyperbule.com. And whatever. Let's talk about TV show of the week. I really just want to talk about how I'm excited for Agent Carter. I haven't watched it yet because it literally just aired as we are recording. But it's back. Season 2 is back. This is very exciting. As we know, the world has agreed that Agent Carter was the best show of 2015. No takebacks. And that's good. I'm glad we unanimously came to that decision. So we can all get excited for Season 2. It's going to tie into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I saw it's going to tie into Doctor Strange, I think they're saying now. So that'll be interesting. But mostly we're going to get more Hayley Atwell. And it's going to be great. So I'll talk about it next week once I have seen it. But for now, I would just bask in the anticipation, which is...
Well, right now, everything's perfect.
Exactly.
Because
nothing
you haven't
has disappointed
seen
it. Me.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I get a little nervous when they do lots of crossovers because, I mean, like, you know, Arrow, for instance, spent so much time doing crossovers that you're like, just go back to plot. Stop, you know.
I feel that with Arrow, but you know what? The Agent Carter, they tied it into S.H.I.E.L.D. or they... tied S.H.I.E.L.D. into Agent Carter last season and it worked really well. So they seem to have a really good handle on those kinds of crossovers. I think Marvel TV is a little better at that than WB TV because the Arrow and the Flash and on the Legends of Tomorrow, like it's getting to be a little too much at the moment for me. And I think it's one of the reasons why I'm a little behind on a lot of those shows because I'm just like, oh, it's just too much. Like, I just want to watch a show. So, what have you been watching lately, Amy? Do you have any, like, shows, any favorites, anything that's coming back that you're excited for?
Again, I've been pretty deep down a hole. I don't think I can overemphasize just quite how much writing is going on. But when I have downtime, I'm actually on a rewatch of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay.
It's a show I am super passionate about and it bears literally no relationship to the Star Trek movies because, you know, I won't give my giant speech, but essentially Star Trek as a show does what science fiction is supposed to do, which is it asks big philosophical questions about who we are and whether what we do today matters tomorrow and how we should progress on all of the kind of big ethical issues that face us as a society. And although the movies are great fun, they're sort of comedy action adventures. But I'm working on a lot of science fiction at the moment, the stuff I've talked about and stuff that I can't talk about. And a lot of it, I'm kind of putting myself in that headspace of how do you do adventure and good storytelling while still asking big questions? And for me, The Next Generation is where that sort of lives.
And it has little baby Will Wheaton in it.
And it has baby Will Wheaton in it, you know, in a succession of just the most hilariously bad sweaters you have ever seen in your life.
Yes.
So it literally has everything.
Yeah. What more could you want?
If everything includes, you know, ethics and bad fashion, then you're sold.
I had a hilarious interview with Patrick Stewart the other day where he was talking about filming Next Gen, and he was saying, like, when they used to get new directors on, they would prank them like the way you'd prank a substitute teacher they'd come up and be like, okay, Patrick, so, you know, you're going to be here in the chair and then you're going to walk over here. And he would be like, oh, no one's told you. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, this is so embarrassing. I only do sitting down acting after lunch. And the director would just be, the director would just totally buy it and would just be standing there like, oh God, like trying to, and Patrick Stewart was like, you could just see him trying to like rework how his entire
everything, like, episode was
going to go, if this guy's not going to stand up. And he was like, yeah, we'd let them go for like quite a while before we were like, just kidding, let's do the thing.
Look, I can stand.
Exactly. I just thought that was hilarious because they were filming them so quickly, like back to back to back. So they were like, we have to have some fun as we're doing this.
Amazing.
Pam, what have you been watching?
So I guess the theme of this show for me is a book to anything adaptations. I tuned into Shadowhunters on ABC Family, formerly known as, now it's Freeform out here for us, which is very odd. Anyway, this is the Cassandra Clare Mortal Instruments trilogy adaptation. And I want to preface this by saying I never made it through the first book, but I plan to pick it up again because, you know, sometimes the second time's the charm. But I did like the movie, which I guess is controversial in some parts of this fandom. But I also really enjoyed the first season. I mean, the first episode of the TV show. So I'm excited to see where it goes from here. And just from watching a couple interviews here and there with the cast, they are like kind of like trying to stay true to the essence of the book, but they're trying to like add in some twists and turns and stuff like that also for, you know, the fans so they can get excited about seeing new things and also for new viewers who maybe are not familiar with the world. But yeah, overall, it was a really fun first episode and I'm interested in just seeing where this goes. So yeah, it's a fun show if you guys are into that.
I have only seen people on Twitter like hate watching it, to be perfectly honest. Like,
really?
Yeah, like there's a collection of people in Australia who I follow who like to tweet while they watch things, and it's very entertaining. I guess her hair is very orange. They don't like that, and the dialogue's not very good, and I have to say, after that, I was like, I kind of want to watch it and see how bad this is.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like you go in with low expectations and you're like, not that bad.
You know, I've got pretty low expectations. They're pretty low.
Maybe you'll enjoy it. To be honest with you, like I said, I'm like the worst person to review this show because I have not read the books. But I feel like it'll do well because it's, I think it's fun. And I think that it's right up the alley of what's trending right now, especially for people of that demographic. Mm-hmm. So,
and maybe it's very telling that you haven't read the books and you're enjoying it. And these people who have read the books are enjoying it less.
Right. Well, like I said, because, I actually liked the movie.
Often the key to enjoying anything is, and I mean, I haven't seen it. And I've also heard mixed reports, but I've heard from people who liked it and people who didn't. But I often think the trick to enjoying any movie or TV adaptation is to let go of the thing that it was and enjoy this version of it because it's never going to be the same.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So true.
And, you know, the Mortal Instruments, there's six books in that series. So, like, they've got a lot to draw on.
Yeah.
If they want to change things, especially like, oh God, I have read those books, but it's a little hazy, but I think the timelines are a little confusing in the first ones. It's all, there's a bit of like, and then meanwhile, this was happening, and you find that out in the next book, and you're like, oh, what? And
wait.
So, yeah. Like, but, no. And so, you know, if they try to combine some of that or maybe condense that, or like maybe lose some of the incest, that could be cool
too. That was
too.
Odd, yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, if you want. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of the selling point. But anyway, well, Pam, you can watch another one and like report back, and
I will definitely report back and let you guys know if I'm keeping it or chucking it.
Right. You need to watch a few more and then decide, right, because right, like we can't decide off basically a pilot. That's
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's not.
Yeah.
Fair.
In any show, pilots often don't bear that much resemblance to what comes next.
Yeah, exactly. It's so not fair true. To judge the show off that. Okay. Funny you should mention Shadowhunters. We will jump into Hot on Hyperball. We talk about some of the fun things we have going on Hyperball. We actually have a couple interviews with people who are in the Shadowhunters. We have the actress who plays Isabel and the actress who plays Jocelyn. So you can go and read those. We were also on the set of Agent Carter Season 2. This was a little while ago, but it was all embargoed. But a lot of those details are now up on the site as well. And we have an interview with the showrunner of Daredevil. Oh, good time to mention Jessica Jones was renewed for Season 2. Very exciting. Yes, the best show ever. I mean, apart from Agent Carter.
That's what I'm excited about. Gallivant Season 2.
Oh, not you. Seriously, that show is so bad.
It's so good.
Oh, God.
It's so wonderfully cheesy.
Oh, this is an ongoing conversation of just my not just incomprehension of people being like, I love Gallivant, and me being like, why, though? You know what? I've only watched the pilot, though. So.
Oh, see, one, you have to keep going. Two, I've seen the first episode of Season 2 when he takes his shirt off.
All right.
And all I'm going to tell you is that Kylie Minogue stars in that episode, and then they were dating. That's how good it was when he took his shirt off.
Wow.
That's
he's
a good
got a magical chest.
Yeah. Mm.
It is a pretty magical chest.
She's doing the Australian sell right now. That's what just happened there. Okay, yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. Gallivant Season 2. I think people have been like, it's aired already, right? It started airing. Yeah. I know.
Yeah, it's coming up on Hulu now.
Yeah. I know people who like the show have been really into it. So good sign if you liked it, and whatever if you didn't. And then shout out to something that I wrote this week, because why not? I'm dictator, so that's what's happening. Which was 70 questions that the cursed child needs to answer about Harry Potter. Mostly because I wanted to clarify one question. So, like, you know, there's a lot of like really important questions on here, like what happened in the 19 years between Deathly Hallows and the epilogue, and like were there, you know, war crimes trials at the end of the war, and like what's happening in the world. And then there are some other even more important questions, like who teaches sex ed at Hogwarts, and do Harry and Teddy Lupin have like deep and meaningful conversations about the sacrifices of their parents and just cry together and be sad, which I need to know. And then I asked if the Weasleys still celebrated George's birthday, because I'm a horrible person. And someone was
God,
like to me,
you are a horrible person.
Someone was like to me, but you mean Fred's birthday, right? And I was like, no, I mean George, because imagine celebrating George's birthday without Fred being there. And they were like, I hate you so much.
<That's> terrible.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, so you can read those. And you know, J.K. Rowling has done like so many interviews that, of course, I'm sure some of these have been answered, but I do not have a photographic memory of like everything I've ever read that she has said, although I do remember a lot of it. So people are like, well, she's already said the answer to this. And I'm like, cool, thanks. That's less questions to be answered now. But thank you for being helpful about that. And they're like, oh, I was trying to be aggressive, but okay, that's fine. So there's that and a lot more of all, as always, trying to speak English, over on hyperball.com, and you can check all of that out. And you know what? I would like to know if people have like burning questions that they need to know about Harry Potter. You should tell us on Twitter, because I feel like there could be some fun stuff in there, and we'll read them out next time. That sounds fun, doesn't it, Pam?
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, so let's do that for sure. All right.
I don't want to be left out next time. I'm having fun.
Well, you can tweet us a question, then you're involved. You have to
I'm
think
not
about
allowed on Twitter until the 31st of January.
Oh, well, what? You can email me a question and then
I'll write a book.
You have.
See, this is why George R. R. Martin needs to take tips from Amy, because clearly she knows how to keep Deborah.
Well, they don't involve Twitter. That much I know from personal experience.
Yeah, I mean, if George R. R. Martin would just stop tweeting us his Harry Potter questions, I'm sure he would have finished Winds of Winter by now.
Amy, you should go the J.K. Rowling route and just have somebody tweet pen and paper are your priority at the moment.
Yeah, for
and
like
just
3 years.
For like three
consecutive.
Yeah, why not bitter? What are you talking about? And now we're like, hey, we really like that you embrace Twitter, but like if you could get off it and write the encyclopedia, that would be awesome too.
Exactly.
But that's fine. We're totally okay with it. It's all good. But yeah, people tell us your questions. I feel like that would be fun. And Amy, you've got about 5 minutes to think of yours if you want to contribute one. No pressure. But you said you like deadlines, so there you go. All right, let's jump into some listener feedback. I want to thank Sam for your Star Wars email. That was great. And Yannick, I think, for your email about the 100, which I'm going to leave to Selena because she would be mad at us if we talked about it without her. She feels very strongly about this.
Do not anger Selena as per previous.
Yes, exactly. That's really our motto. And then over on Hyperbole, we had some comments. Emily said, which I just like that Emily left this comment on the actual podcast post. This is not on the article. Where she was like, I love the 70 questions article. Hashtag rolling must read. So thank you for that, Emily. And Chloe told us that she binge-watched Agent Carter this weekend and it totally lived up to the hype. So thanks for the recommendation. And you're welcome, Chloe. Now you'll be able to watch season 2. And that's exciting times. We had a couple tweets from you guys about the Oscars. Pam, did you want to read those?
Sure. So we asked you guys what you thought about Oscars So White and all the hubbub that's going on about that. Karen said, time to get rid of the Oscars completely. No need to debate or save something that's outlived in its usefulness. So some strong words. Jamie said, I felt that great performances from people of color were looked over in favor of good performances from others. Disappointing. And also went on to say, and I'll pick bones about lack of women directors being nominated. Still, though, I do find motivation in this. Grr. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's people are frustrated and I feel that.
Yeah.
Okay. Shauna told us, I think this was in response to Kyle's arbitrary read 11 books in 2016 challenge that we made up for him, where Kyle wanted some tips on how to read more books. So Shauna said, reading rule number one, make time to read. That's really the rule. But I like this one. Reading rule number two, read short books so you can get through more of them, which I think is like gold.
That's amazing. That's
well, great. Except that, you know, my husband is behind on his reading goal and he literally came to me last night and said, I need a book I can finish by the end of January.
Oh.
Because his resolution was to make sure he got through at least one a month because he tends to read big stuff. And he's like, I don't have a lot of time here. Work with me. What can I read that's fast?
That's funny because Kyle had the same thing. Kyle, another one of our co-hosts, who was saying like, oh, I think I want to read 10 books this year. If I could read 10, that'd be good. And I was like, why don't you do one a month? Because then you have like a deadline. It'd be helpful. And then he was like, oh, but January is almost over. And I was like, okay, well, you can read 11 books because January is almost over. You can start in February. So now it's Kyle's read 11 books in 2016 challenge.
Ah, see, I didn't marry a quitter. He's still going.
Yeah.
He's going to get through one in January.
What book did you find, fam? What book did you pick?
You listening, Kyle? I gave him, which, and this is probably unfair because it looks thin, but it's actually not that short. I was just being mean. I gave him a book called Coda by Emma Trevain, which is an awesome sci-fi book about music, musical technology that is used to control the population.
Oh, that sounds right up my alley.
Yeah.
It is fantastic.
That kind
it's
of Coda.
Coda?
Coda, as in, you know, the musical
right. Coda. Coda, yeah.
You're speaking Pam's language.
You are.
Oh, it's a great read. Recommend it.
All right, everyone, more homework for you after you've read all of Amy's books. No pressure, but I'll expect a lot of responses about them as soon as this episode goes online.
They need something to do while they wait for, you know, the 8 I've got coming.
So true, so true.
So it can entertain them in the meantime.
Excellent. And, of course, you can listen to Hype because we are here to talk to you about things. I don't know where this is going. Okay. Our final comment for the week came from Samantha on Twitter who said, thanks, Hype. It's official and done with season 1 of Unreal. I'm so excited that you watched it. Unreal is another one of our favorite shows. You're sensing a theme. I like shows about women. So good. And now you'll be all caught up when we get into Unreal Season 2, which is going to be really good. So that's it for feedback. Thank you guys so much. Make sure you let us know what you think about all the things we talked about today. You can tell us on hyperbole.com in the comments. You can tweet us at hyperbolehype. And if you really liked the show, you could always leave us a review on iTunes. That would be really nice. So rating and review helps other people find the show. And then we have more people to talk to about fun fandom things. So that's all good. So I think, oh God, did we just lose Pam? I think we just lost Pam.
The Australian domination is complete.
Oh, it's so complete. This is so exciting. I guess that's it. She doesn't get to come back. Well, Amy, welcome to Hype. We record every week. I look forward to seeing you next time.
Yeah, it's just us now. We've seen everybody else off.
Yeah, you've got a lot of free time, so I think this will work out well.
I don't have to leave my house, so there's that.
True that. Why do you want to let us know where can people find you? I know you're not on Twitter or anything at the moment, but if they want to find you,
oh, let's face it, I will be within days. They can find me on Twitter at Amy Kaufman. They can find me on Instagram at Amy Kaufman Author because somebody else took my name. Outrageous. Rude. There can be only one. And they can find me on my website at amykaufman.com.
Excellent. And make sure you sign up for the newsletter because then you can get those deleted scenes.
It's true.
And that's it for us. We'll be back next week with more news and everything. We've got some fun things planned, but we can't tell you what they are yet. But stay with us if you like things that start with G and end with Ilmore Girls. is that how you do the teasing thing? Did I get it right?
More or less how I do it, but then sometimes publicists sit me down afterwards and try and explain again what was meant to happen.
I see. And you're like, no, well, I already told everyone, so that's a shame.
They seemed pleased. I'm pretty sure it went fine.
Yeah, everyone was really excited. It's totally fine. Yeah. It's not a problem. Okay, so we'll be back next time. We've lost Pam, but we had Pamela before, the lovely Pamela. I'm Marima, and you are...
Oh, my God, who am I? No. I'm sorry. I'm Amy Kaufman, and thanks for having me.
Yay, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Guys, Marima, Amy, where'd you guys go?